I think we can confidently say that Trump and Merkel are never going to be best friends. Among your best friends, do you feel or recognise just a soupçon of envy occasionally? It's quite normal. You left the thing stinking, I'd shake from your spell. If it weren't for my drinking, the wind bites more bitter with each light of morning. You've heard the expression, love your enemy. But what about your friend? Do you ever think they're an enemy? There's a little bit of this that goes on, you know, a little bit of envy amongst friends, siblings, lovers, you name it. Joining me to discuss this, it's not a delicate topic, but it's one we don't always like to reflect on, is Sarah Pratazzi. She's Assistant Professor of Philosophy at the University of Puget Sound in Washington State. Sarah Pratazzi, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you've written a piece entitled Love Your Frenemy. What motivated you to do this?
I work mainly in the philosophy of emotions, and I had already written separately on love first during my doctoral work in Italy, and then on envy. And at some point, I realized that my fascination with this apparently very different, often perceived as opposite emotions, was actually not coincidental, that there was a deep connection between these two emotions. And in a sense, we can say that these emotions are two sides of the same coin. Immanuel Kant, a German philosopher, has talked about sociable and sociability. The idea that human beings have two very different ways of relating to one another. So they have some really social tendencies, right? We're capable of the deepest love, of altruism, of self-sacrifice, in ways that are perhaps unique or at least very evident in the human species. But we are also capable of
darker things.
Yeah, much darker things, right? These very hateful feelings, and envy is often considered this very shameful emotion that is not just shameful for ourselves, but it is immoral, right? And so at some point I realized, actually, it's not clear that you can have one without the other, right? And I can sort of explain a bit more why these two emotions are so intertwined, if you want me to.
Yeah, I do want to know why they're intertwined, because I think most of us, it's not for me to speak for most of us, but intuitively I sense that most people understand the sociable and unsociable aspects of humanity. We understand this great altruism, deep love, all those positive things you mentioned that humans are capable of. And we also understand that there's a darker side, but we don't always think that they're in the same person. We tend to say the darker side, oh, that's a bad person. You know, the rotten egg, you're not normal, you're a bad person. So tell me why they are so intertwined together.
Yeah. So I argue that there are two features of human psychology with regard to these emotions that make it the case that you can't really have one without the other, even within the very same person and the very same relationship. So envy, we have robust empirical evidence that shows that envy thrives in conditions of similarity and equality. We do not feel envy toward people who are much prettier or much better at sports or much more intelligent or much richer than us. We tend to feel envy toward people who are just slightly more fortunate, just slightly better than us, whom we perceive as similar in some important respects, but we feel we're lacking a little bit with regard to something that we care about.
Look, that strikes a real chord because, look, I don't know about you, but I not only don't want, but in any event, I can't afford a super yacht. I look at them in magazines and I think, oh, gee, if I had that much money, I don't think I'd spend it on that. But I don't feel any envy at all towards people who are sort of multi-billionaires. And as you say, it's probably because I recognise it's just out of my league and I don't even think about it.
Right, exactly. Because that comparison doesn't make you feel bad, right? Because it's like, well, those people have radically different lives, right? But your neighbor, you know, when we say the grass looks always greener on the other side of the fence, you're our neighbors, the people who are near us, maybe our family members, our friends in the same class in high school. Those are the people that we compare ourselves to. And those are the people whose greater fortune tells us something about ourselves, right? Maybe we are not doing as well as we should or we could. Now, it turns out that for love too, even though, you know, we like to say that opposites attract, but again, empirical evidence shows that for the vast majority of traits that matter in personal relationships, that's not true. It's similar who attract each other. So we tend to love thrives in similarity of values, of background, of, you know, family resemblance and relationships. So also love thrives in conditions of similarity. Now, so similarity and equality is one condition that sort of makes it the case that love and envy are so deeply interconnected. But there is another point. Human beings care about being cool, to say
simple,
right? Or what Hobbes would talk about it in terms of, you know, so the British sentimentalists and British political philosophers in the modern era would talk about honor. Right? Mm-hmm. But basically, it's coolness. Right? Today, we'd say we want to be cool. We want to be considered cool, and coolness, like honor, is a positional good. Its value depends on the fact that there is a hierarchy, there is a ranking. If we are all cool, then nobody is, right? Social esteem, basically, that's what I'm getting at. So we want to be esteemed, and we are attracted to people who are socially esteemed. We are attracted to people who stand out in a crowd. But then we also want to be that, right? So this is easy to see in friendships, especially at certain points of life, right? Especially when we're young. Our best friend is the kind of person that we want to be with, but also we want to be like them too. We want to become like them. And so these two things, the fact that we're friends with people who are similar with us, and that also tends to elicit envy, and the fact that we care about basically being better than others in some ways with regard to certain things, that's what creates this condition such that love is the luminous side of envy and vice versa, envy is the darker side of love. So that's why I argue that these two emotions are not just likely to coexist in many relationships, but they're bound to exist. But, you know, I also think that it's not as bad as it sounds. So, you know, one of the things that I care about is that I've written about the fact that there are different kinds of envy. And so, of course, some kinds of envy are really toxic and damaging, right? We all have heard this idea of toxic relationships and, again, this idea of frenemies, right? And so some of these relationships are actually not conducive to human flourishing, and we should not try to encourage a certain kind of envy or feelings of envy, and we should, you know, stay away from people that are very envious toward us and that try to harm us more or less implicitly or consciously. But not all envy is bad. You know, all emotions have different facets and they all play a role, right? I mean, they're all shaped by evolution like anything else. And so all emotions are conducive to flourishing, and envy in particular can be positive. So this is what I call emulative envy. Some psychologists call it benign envy. But the idea is that the right kind of envy can stimulate us to be better, to self-improve, and even within loving relationship, right? Again, as I said, it's a matter of equality, and I think it's an important component of at least a certain kind of Western contemporary idea of love, especially friendly love and romantic love. It's important that we're equals, that we're peers in a relationship. And so I think it's okay that there is a little bit of emulative envy that is focused on becoming better, right? Becoming
That's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. I'm talking with Sarah Pratazzi. She's Assistant Professor of Philosophy at the University of Puget Sound in Washington State. And we're talking about envy. Love and envy, are they different sides of the same coin? They might be. Sarah, you're talking about good envy and bad envy. Where does admiration come in?
Good. That's an excellent and difficult question. So some philosophers actually are not quite persuaded that emulative envy is different, is distinct from admiration, but I think that that is the case. So admiration is an emotion that has a positive affect, as psychologists say. And in simple words, that means that it's pleasant. Mm-hmm. When I admire, you know, a famous, very accomplished philosopher, I feel good. So Kierkegaard, a Danish philosopher, has talked about admiration as happy self-surrender, right? I admire, say, Martha Nussbaum. I think she's one of the greatest philosophers of all times. And I feel good when I think about her. And she is so much better than me, right? I cannot feel envy towards someone like her because I think I'll never be as good, right? I'll never be such a brilliant philosopher. And so I surrender myself happily in the same way as I can admire a work of art, right? Or maybe a great panorama. So admiration is very similar to awe and wonder. It's an affiliative emotion that makes us want to be close to the other person. We can't really admire someone whom we don't like. Mm-hmm. But emulative envy is a form of envy, so it has a negative affect. It's unpleasant to feel. It makes us feel lacking. And we might feel emulative envy towards someone whom we don't like, right? Someone with whom we don't want to be close. We just want to be like them. So I think phenomenologically, the way they feel from the inside, they are quite different emotions. And the fact that people confuse them, I think, is due simply to the fact that there is this popular belief that envy is necessarily bad and malicious. And so when people talk about positive forms of envy, they think, oh, admiration. But in fact, they are quite different emotions. They arise in different circumstances. And so again, the empirical evidence is that they play different roles. And so it seems that admiration, it's still a bit speculative at this point, but social psychologists think that admiration might give us long-term goals, whereas emulative envy gives us short-term steps to achieve those goals.
Yeah, I get it. Now, let me finish by asking you this. Have you read the novel My Brilliant Friend?
Oh, yes, I devoured them.
Oh, you devoured the Elena Ferrante novels. Does the two characters, Leela and Lenu, you think that book really explains a lot, without going into the technicalities, about mm-hmm. envy and friendship, because they were each envious of each other, and you realise at the end that one wasn't the brilliant friend, they were both the brilliant friend to each other.
Yes. Mm. Yes. That's how it seemed to me. I mean, I haven't read any kind of literary criticism of the book, so perhaps this is a unique interpretation. I doubt it. But to me, at first, you know, I thought, well, you know, the narrating voice is the one who thinks the other person is their brilliant friend. But then you can see that they actually both feel the same kind of mixture of all sorts of different emotions. I mean, I think one of the reasons why the books have been so successful is that they speak to something very real, to features of especially female-friendly relationships that are rarely talked about, but that we all know. And I think it's a very honest and intense depiction of this combination of envy and love that can, however, be, you know, difficult at times to endure, but that can also really contribute to the flourishing of our personal relationships.
It always helps, doesn't it? If we understand ourselves a bit better, sometimes we can understand others better, and that's a good thing. Sarah Patasi, Assistant Professor of Philosophy at the University of Puget Sound in Washington State, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.